Hello and welcome to the show. Today we're getting practical and a little bit provocative. How to actually secure Australia's wildlife in 2025 using tech and policy that work together. I've been digging through more than 50 real-world conservation programs from NGOs, agencies, and universities, and a clear pattern keeps popping up. Teams that pair predictive technology with policy muscle consistently outperform the old monitor and hope approach by 2 to 3 times on measurable outcomes. That's not hype. It's the data talking. Think about what we've been up against. During the black summer of 2019-20, roughly 24 million hectares burned, and an estimated 3 billion animals were impacted. You could feel the system buckling. It showed us, in painful detail, that reactive conservation can't keep pace with the scale and speed of today's crises. The teams doing best right now run more like emergency response units. They make decisions off real-time data streams. They use predictive models to see trouble coming. And they pre-position people and resources before species are at the cliff's edge. If you want the step-by-step playbook and the pitfalls to avoid, there's an essential field guide on avoiding Australian conservation mistakes for 2025 that's worth your time. But let me walk you through 2 strategies that are reshaping outcomes on the ground. First up, build a national biodiversity digital twin. Or, if that sounds too big, start with a regional one. The counterintuitive move that actually works is prioritizing risk forecasting over raw headcounts. We've spent decades counting, but we're leaving predictive capability on the table. Satellites like Sentinel-2 deliver 10-meter resolution every few days, which is incredible. Layer on AI-enabled camera traps, bioacoustics, and environmental DNA sampling, and you start to see ecosystems as living, changing systems in near real time. After the Black Summer fires, remote sensing mapped burn severity across millions of hectares in days. That's the speed biodiversity management needs now. But unified digital twin brings all that data into one place and lets you forecast crash risk weeks to months in advance. It's a shift from firefighting to proactive risk management. The European Space Agency's Copernicus program processes a torrent of Earth observation data daily. And when you tap into that alongside local sensors, you get a live picture of habitat condition and species presence. This matters in Australia because climate extremes are intensifying and becoming less predictable. The Bureau of Meteorology has been clear on that trend. Waiting for annual surveys to tell us what already collapsed is a recipe for heartbreak. So how do you make it practical? Use a simple loop: detect, predict, respond. Detect using satellites, AI cameras, acoustic loggers, and eDNA. Predict using species habitat models trained on historical patterns. So you know which environmental conditions tend to precede declines, and respond when pre-agreed thresholds are crossed. The magic here is that early stress shows up first in habitat condition and movement signatures, not in abundance counts. You gain precious time by watching the right signals. Picture this. Your models know that when vegetation health drops below a certain seasonal norm, at the same time, acoustic detections of key species fall. You've got a heightened probability of a local crash. That triggers an alert, field verification, and immediate action, like temporary refuge provisioning, water supplementation, or targeted predator suppression, before you lose the population. Machine learning now flags vegetation stress and water availability changes weeks before we'd notice them on the ground. That time advantage is everything. If you're wondering where to start, keep it simple. Choose one priority landscape, maybe a riparian corridor or a woodland under pressure. Pull 5 years of Sentinel-2 and radar data with Google Earth Engine. It's free and powerful. Add 2 low-cost, high-impact inputs, passive acoustic loggers for continuous listening, and monthly eDNA sampling at key water points to track who's still around. Then set clear triggers. For example, if the vegetation index drops more than one standard deviation below the seasonal average, and acoustic detections of focal species decline at the same time, you automatically deploy your field team and set up temporary refuges. And please, log everything. Put actions and outcomes into the Atlas of Living Australia or your preferred hub so the model learns. That feedback loop is how detection and prediction get sharper over time. The insider secret here is simple. Predicting risk before a crash and intervening early is far more cost-effective than reacting after the fact. It's cheaper, it's kinder to wildlife, and it saves you from emergency measures that drain budgets and teams. Now let's flip to strategy two. Invasive predator suppression is the budget priority, not the afterthought. Here's what the data shows that many programs miss. Australia can't rehabilitate its way out of predation pressure. Feral cats occupy about 99.8% of the continent. Removing a few individuals without reducing overall pressure is like sprinting on a treadmill, exhausting and stationary. What actually works is a three-part approach. First, smart trap networks and AI-enabled monitoring to target predators efficiently and reduce bycatch. We're talking traps with species recognition cameras that only trigger for the right animal, and sensor data that tells you where to place effort for maximum effect. Second, strategic exclosures, or fenced arcs, to protect source populations while they recover. These sanctuaries have re-established locally extinct mammals like bilbies and bettongs. Third, focused island or peninsula eradications. Globally, invasive vertebrate eradications on islands succeed at roughly 85 to 90%. They're discreet, they're controllable, and they deliver wins that can seed broader recovery. I want to be clear. Rehabilitation is vital work. Organizations like WA Wildlife treat thousands of injured animals every year, and that matters. But prevention beats triage every single time, ecologically and economically. The breakthrough insight is to invest in removing predator pressure first, then scale translocations and rewilding to recolonize recovered habitat. If you release animals into landscapes still dominated by feral cats and foxes, it's like pouring water into a bucket full of holes. The Threatened Species Commissioner's action plans reinforce this sequencing. Predator control isn't optional, it's foundational. Technology has made this dramatically more effective. Thermal imaging drones can sweep large areas at night when ferals are active. GPS-collared Judas animals lead you straight to otherwise hidden groups. And the new generation of smart traps reduces non-target capture to near zero, which is better for welfare and for community support. But there's one pro tip you can't ignore. Don't underinvest in maintenance. It's the number one failure point. Predator suppression isn't a one and done. It's a system that needs persistent attention, monitoring, and resourcing to hold the gains you've made. Let me connect these two strategies because they amplify each other. The digital twin gives you early warning on habitat stress and wildlife movement. That same data can guide where to surge predator control and when to tighten exclosures, so your interventions land at the right place and the right time. Meanwhile, strong policy frameworks make it possible to act on those signals quickly, fast-tracking permits for rapid actions, aligning funding to trigger points, and coordinating agencies so decisions take days, not months. If you're leading a program or advising one, here's the immediate path I'd take. Start with one landscape and build a minimal digital twin using satellite, acoustics, and eDNA. Define crisp thresholds that trigger action. At the same time, rebalance your budget towards sustained predator suppression using smart traps, drones, and where feasible, fencing or island operations. Pre-commit your partners, land managers, councils, traditional owners, NGOs, to act when the thresholds are crossed and report everything publicly. Transparency builds trust, and it attracts funding when people see a clear loop from detection to results. We can do this at scale. We have the sensors, the satellites, the machine learning, and the on-ground know-how. What shifts outcomes is connecting those tools to fast, decisive policy and a prevention-first mindset. Australia's biodiversity is under unprecedented pressure. But that doesn't mean we're powerless. It means we need to operate like what we are, stewards in a rapidly changing system who can see ahead, act early, and stick with the job. If you take one thing from today, let it be this. Stop waiting for the crash. Build your detection, prediction, and response loop. Flip your budget to reduce predation pressure before you reintroduce. And use the wins, because you will get them, to scale the work. For a deeper dive into common pitfalls and how to avoid them, that 2025 Field Guide on Australian Conservation Mistakes is a solid companion. But you don't need to wait for anything to start. Pull the data, set the triggers, and move. Thanks for listening. And for the work you do, the best time to change the way we protect wildlife is now, and the tools are already in our hands.